Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Coom Dog, every week with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. What a delight to talk to Ron Coomer. He's our guy, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Ron, good morning. How are you? Morning,
Mikey, David. I am doing great. How are you guys this morning?
Oh, you're always doing great. It's fantastic. I got to tell you, you know, we've been talking about kind of the scary aspect of what's happening in this baseball season, and that, of course, is seeing some players knocked back with COVID tests, with seeing some coaches test positive and the contact tracing that follows. You know, it's just enough to really interfere with the season, and it's a real problem. Listen, health and safety, top priority. I get it, but it's also there are baseball issues that follow.
There are, and you know, you just as somebody, you know, I've gotten my second shot, and the doctor you just had on, it does make you feel a lot better just knowing that you're vaccinated, and I'm not fully vaccinated from the time period that you got to wait. But, you know, you just hope, you know, that we can get through this thing. It's tough for teams. It's tough for, you know, your family members. The whole thing is just, I would have never dreamed of this ever. And now we're dealing with it in baseball. And, you know, the Cubs are losing players day after day here this past week from COVID. And last year, I don't believe the Cubs had one player test positive during the season last year. And now you've had quite a few issues, and you know they've been really diligent about trying to wear their mask and do the right thing, but it just happens.
And you know, Ron, I think it's fair to wonder, you know, because of the way it's impacted their pitching staff, and you know, you're not as close as you'd want to be to the team because of COVID, but you're closer than many. Is there a baseball correlation here? Is the fact that the Cubs are dealing with this issue, and maybe that they don't have the uniformity in the clubhouse over what to do about vaccinations, is there any connection between how this has affected the team in terms of numbers, in terms of the issue that they're debating, and their play on the field?
I don't know. You know, David, I would think not. This is, you know, this COVID situation is something that, to me, you know, you talk to five of your friends, and you get three people that just can't wait to get the vaccine. You get one person that's on the fence, and then one that's a conspiracy theorist, right? I mean, yeah. And those are your five buddies, you know, that you've grown up with. So you just, I don't know if it's affecting their play as far as that goes. But when you're losing players and you lose a Kyle Hendricks, I mean, as far as actually missing games, of course, right, it's going to affect the play on the field. So I think the conversations, I think all the guys are close enough they can get through differences of opinion. But the facts are the facts of missing players. Sure. Would you like to see Kyle Hendricks pitch the last ball game? Absolutely. You know, he's your number one starter, so you'd love to have him on the mound, and that wasn't the case a couple starts ago.
We look at this team, and, you know, the big story now is there's suspension for the manager. There won't be any David Ross tonight because of of Ryan Tepera throwing behind Brandon Woodruff. And then you've got Tepera himself with hit with a three-game suspension. He will appeal that. But, you know, the bullpen's damaged. Now you got no manager tonight, and you're going to be missing a guy to come out of the bullpen when there are already plenty of players down. I know that, you know, we talked about it quite a bit. They didn't hit him. They threw behind him. I understand there was kind of a message because of what had happened with Wilson Contreras. Listen, there's apparently no unwritten rules in baseball anymore. They want to keep people from coming out, and they want to keep people kind of from throwing at anyone, and this is what you get.
Yeah, and the league, you know, the league is, in my opinion, is doing a very poor job of it. That's just how I view it. You protect everybody with kid gloves like they're 8 years old playing T-ball at all the other positions, and then the hitter is left there, you know, standing there naked basically by himself. If he gets drilled in the head, tough break for you. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. You get drilled the next day with an intentional fastball right in the middle of the back or way up and in again, and you get upset and nothing, you know, you're just supposed to just walk to first base. And I say the people that are making these suspensions and that, stand in there and get whacked with a fastball and see how you feel. I 95 off your ribs, you're going to be upset. And you have to take that in consideration, and they're not. And it's not like it's a one-time deal and then a guy took off to the mound and there was a problem. To me, it's, you know, a guy got hit 7 times in 12 games and nothing was done about it, once in the helmet. So, you know, and that's why these suspensions have come, Mikey, because, you know, one guy got, Contreras got fined $7,500, which right. is ridiculous. So now it's right in the forefront of the league and their issues. Then the Cubs retaliate after he gets hit again and a couple other guys get hit. Now they send a message and now they're the bad guy. So, to me, you slide into second base, and if you don't go right into the base, you know, heaven forbid, you might touch the guy. The catcher is off limits. You can't touch him. The turning the pivot, that's out, but the hitter can get hit in the head multiple times, and we just say, well, that's part of the game. Our league is just really struggling with how to deal with all this, and I just don't believe they're doing a very good job. That's just... And that's not even, you know, I know I'm pretty biased with the Cubs, but I look at that and I've looked at it, you know, with all the other teams too. It's just a poor situation that's been dealt with.
I love that, Ron. I think your opinion is strong and is respected, and as somebody who's been around the game for a long time. I also appreciate your insight into what ails the Cubs hitters. And I forget after which or during which tough offensive night it was, but you and Pat were talking about what is the problem here. And I think that you've identified it a couple different times, because the Cubs seem to be stuck in between the way you described it. And tell me if I'm understanding this correctly. They're kind of caught between selectiveness and aggressiveness. And they become sort of conditioned to be really selective at the plate and show that plate discipline over time. And now you've got David Ross saying, be selfish, go after your pitch and do it with it what you need to do. That's a tough spot to be in, and I think we're seeing the results of that sort of in-between nature of each at bat.
Yeah, you're right, David, and I feel that way. I really do. And that's, to me, as a group, when you look at the offense in general, and then you look at it individually, let's say if you were a hitting coach and you look, I really feel like Javi's in between right now. Do I try to hit the breaking ball? Do I take it every time? Am I just on the fastball? I think there's a few guys. I'm just bringing Javi up as an example. And they are. There's a time and a place in your approach to hitting for everything, right? Early in a ball game, if you're trying to get the starter's pitch count up, taking pitches and things like that, are all good. But then when you have runners in scoring position, that flips the switch, right? And now everything else changes. And now the important part is driving those runs in and getting those runs home. So to me, you have to understand what the ultimate goal is. The ultimate goal in baseball is obviously to win. And if you're an offensive player, that's to score runs. So you're either a run producer or you're the guy that touches home plate. And to me, when you're standing at the plate and you got runners in scoring position, your approach has to change some to try to do that and accomplish that job. And right now, I think there are guys still that are in between. The one guy I feel like that has made this adjustment in looking at his body of work, let's say last year, and has made a change has been Chris Bryant. KB is now much more aggressive at home plate. He is on the fastball now. And the old funny adage that, you know, old hitting coaches used to say, you know how you hit the breaking ball? You hit the fastball first. you know, some hitting coach would be smoking a heater, talking to you in the cage, you know, and that's the thing they're doing. And I just look and go, wow, this is great, you know? This is like old school baseball to the max. But it was true, and that's what, you know, and that's what would happen, you know? But I see KB has made some adjustments, there's no doubt.
All right, so Atlanta, this is a team that is red hot right now. They've got a player that's vying for MVP in the early going, a guy that's hitting as well as anybody in baseball. He's what I like to call in the Yermin Mercedes zone. What do you think about the importance of this series? Number one, it's good to not play Pittsburgh or the Brewers anymore. I mean, good God, enough of that. But you got to win a series, and this is a tough one to win.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough one to win. This is a good team. They get off to kind of a slow start, and all of a sudden they've picked it up and they're playing good baseball. I really think I always felt like, especially in the last couple years, the Cubs have played better when they play teams that are good. You know, you play in Atlanta and they've got some star players in their ball club. You know, they've got some guys that can run around the field and do some things, and you're going to see them in all-star games. And I think it brings out the best in Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and some of those guys. So is this an important series? I think it's important just for them to start playing the caliber of baseball they're capable of playing, and that's basically on the offensive side because the rest of it's been okay. But it's important, just for that reason, Mike, it really is.
Have any of the guys that we've seen because of the way that the Cubs have had to adjust to the COVID protocols and the way it's affected the pitching staff and the contact tracing, have any of the guys, Justin Steele, Stropey, Shelby Miller, who was not good, do you think any of these guys stick? Do you think they get another chance? What is their futures? Because this is a bullpen that I think all season long is going to have a feeling of trial and error on it.
Well, Steele could. Depending on, you know, how the things go with left-handers. He's extremely young as far as time in the big leagues. He had his, you know, first outing the other day in his first big league strikeout. Stropey showed something that was impressive in spring training, and that was his velocities back. So he was thrown back in the 94-95 range in spring training. So he's a guy that if he's showing that velocity, that means his slider's going to have that great snap to it that we've seen in years past. So he's a guy I would say would stick. And the reason why is because he's been there and done that so many times that, you know, if his arm is right and his velocity's good, you know, he could turn the page day in, day out. Whether it's good, bad, you're going to get his best effort. So he's a guy that could stick, I would say, David.
Ron, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Always a joy, buddy.
Have a great weekend.
Just think about that old hitting coach, old leather neck in the cage, smoking a heater, giving you baseball advice. Being 20 years old, I just couldn't believe it.
Drinking black coffee.
Totally. You got it, David, at 7 in the morning.
That's right.
Miss you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, buddy.
Thanks, Coom.
It's Ron Coomer. He's the greatest. I love that. smoking That's a funny. Heater. There's something about a heater that is very funny. That's good stuff.
Very specific. It seems like it almost happened to Coombe that way, you know, back
exactly.
when he was a
22-year-old.
Yeah.
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 That's funny. He's lived it. 312-644-6767. You know, is there any way of putting a I mean, how do you determine how important it is to win this bloody series for the Cubs? And you don't want to put too much on it because odds are they could struggle to win this series. But this is one you got to get. And thank God they're not playing the Brewers again or the Pirates. I've had enough of that. Let's take
a
break.
Yeah, kind of sick of those two teams.
Yeah, I'll take a break. 312-644-6767. Molly and Haw on the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
What's something that you want people to know about your teammate? And just after all that he's been through, after all you guys have been through, what this really means for him and you?
It means everything to us. A lot of things that people see in social media or people say in social media is really only what they see from the outside. And all the injuries and stuff that Carlos has gone through are minimalistic to what he's actually gone through in his life. And we go home every day and we try to come back to the field as prepared as possible and continue to work and do as good as we can. This is our job and we want to perform as good as we can every day. And for him to do that last night is huge.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Zach Collins. He was on yesterday with Layla Rahimi, as you heard, and the sabermetric one, Dan Bernstein, and soulless one. I didn't say that. Someone else did. And talking about the no-hitter by Carlos Rodon. What a wonderfully romantic and wonderful moment in the history of baseball. Pretty much destroyed by Bernstein in crosstalk yesterday when he got obsessed with the Dipper. I don't know why. Why does he do it? I don't know why. Why do we bring it up? I don't know why. But it was good to hear from Zach Collins.
It was good to hear from Zach Collins. And it was good to hear from Ethan Katz also, who did have his own Zoom session, Mully. And one of the things we've heard from the new White Sox pitching coach was the optimism you're speaking about. When you throw a no-hitter, then suddenly you start to see, you know, bigger and better things ahead. He said that if healthy, and again, that's a big if, right, that Carlos Rodon could be one of the best pitchers in the American League and in baseball. And that sounds like it's a lofty expectation. It sounds like it may be, you know, getting caught in the moment, perhaps. But if healthy, Carlos Rodon does have the stuff that makes you understand why Ethan Katz might come to that conclusion after being around Carlos Rodon just for a few months.
Yeah, I think that we kind of wondered a little bit yesterday. We didn't really get into it, but the idea being, who's next? Who on that staff is next to throw a no-hitter? You know, once upon a time when Jake Arrieta was with the Cubs, you thought every time he took the mound, he might throw a no-hitter, and he threw a couple of them. He was that good. So I don't know that we're seeing anyone get to that point where they're a danger anytime out. But didn't Giolito open his second start after his no-hitter last year with a pretty good opportunity to stretch it a little bit? And I laughed yesterday when Lance Lynn started pitching and got through a couple innings and Jason Benetti was saying, you know, 22 outs away. I thought it was very funny. Really enjoyed that kind of thing. But I don't know who the next guy is up. Is it Carlos Rodon the next time out? He's only given up two hits in two games. Is it Lucas Giolito? Where yet? Is Dallas Keuchel not there yet? Lance Lynn? Dylan Cease today. Is that the next no-hitter?
Could be. You know, I thought it was also funny. Katz referenced the last time he was around a no-hitter was Lucas Giolito's in high school out of Harvard Westlake. That's the last no-hitter he was a part of back when he was the high school coach for Giolito. I think that Dylan Cease has the stuff. I'm not going to predict tonight. I don't think that he's going to beat your hated Red Sox as much as you hate Boston. He's not going to come through for you in that way. You do hate Boston.
Love Boston. Great town. Had a lot of fun in Boston.
No, that's not what you were saying in 5 o'clock hour.
I was saying I'm tired of Boston sports teams having success. I said that. I said to you on Bill Belichick's 69th birthday, I'll allow his former tight end to make any jokes he wants. But I don't jump in on that. Gronk, who said that there was a 69% chance that Julian Edelman will wind up with Tampa. I mean, he's just a wacky kind of fella. But Bill Belichick being 69, it reminded me of how much the Boston sports scene kind of drags you down.
Yeah,
and then I was accused of...
How about this? There was spite in your voice that put a skip in your step. Let's just say that.
Resentment. I am filled with resentment. I don't think that's a new story, and it's anything we need to break down. I'm not looking for some stretch out on the couch to tell you about my issues, David. But somebody accused me of somehow... denying my own Irishness by picking on Boston.
I'm a first-generation
American. My parents came here on a boat. They didn't go to Boston, okay? So I don't equate the two things.
Well, I'm glad you're not touchy about it then. At least that's good.
Boston. God, it's time to beat Boston. Let's end that. Why should they be hot? I like what you're saying. Dylan Cease throws the no-hitter today. I like that, David. Good
pick. I didn't say today. I said the next one on the White Sox staff could be Dylan Cease just based on his stuff. And I think that when you see how electric his stuff can be, it's not a matter of can he do it. It's can he harness all of that talent and all that potential in the same direction, at the same time, in the same game. And every inning, because he can look – he can look great one inning, and then it can get away from him, and he's got a 32-pitch inning the next. And that's what he's got to avoid tonight. Start strong, pitch with confidence, have command, and you'll see the Dylan Cease that Steve Stone says, makes him a guy that he has a lot of hope in when he looks to the future.
We'll talk to Stoney next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
One of the things I think about is the Nasty Boys in 1990 with the Cincinnati Reds. I think this bullpen has a chance to be that kind of bullpen, only it's going to be top to bottom. It's not going to be three guys. It's going to be seven or eight guys. And I think they're really going to dominate if the Sox have the lead heading into the seventh inning. I think it's going to be very tough to come back against this bullpen.
And the pitcher, a 12-game winner already this year, Steve Stone.
Former American League Cy Young Award winner.
Stone, remarkable story, this young man. A career apparently over, rotator cuff problem, rejected surgery. Went to a kinesiologist, muscular therapy, after knocking around the National League, the American League, back to the National League with the Cubs. Finally, free agentry. Joining Baltimore after it lived up to his word with Bill Beck and the White Sox. And now here he is, all the way back.
Three and a half decades plus of excellence in the booth. No one breaks baseball down like Stoney.
They've been trying to keep a lot of pitches away from Jose Abreu tonight. I'm thinking this is a really good matchup with him and Otero. Let's see if he gets careless with one.
In the air left field. Allen back at the warning track. It is gone! Up. It's two runs.
Sox lead 7-5, and Jose did indeed enjoy the offerings of Dan Otero.
Steve Stone with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
3-2. Rodon.
Oh, get there.
To third. Moncada. Carlos Rodon has thrown a no-hitter.
One shoelace away from perfection. And you never really know what you're going to see when you have an opportunity to come to the ballpark. We saw one last year. We see one this year. Both dominating. And this one was something special for Carlos Rodon. The game was never in doubt after the first inning. The only doubt was, would he get the no-hitter? Answered by Moncada, and what a night.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. My, oh my, what a fantastic night in White Sox history, and a delight to hear Steve Stone and Jason Benetti do the call, and brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. We bring in Steve Alpamonte Nissan at Melrose Park on North Avenue, apnissan.com. Stoney, always a joy. Good morning. How are you?
Morning, Steve.
I'm doing fine this morning, and the boys are in Boston, ready to take on a very good Red Sox team, and Jason and I will be ready to go.
Steve, I got to tell you, that was a delight, and maybe something that I never thought I'd see from Carlos Rodon. And I admitted yesterday that I had my doubts about him. There was part of me that was hoping that Ronaldo would end up being the guy that could break through and earn a spot in that rotation. But I don't know that I expected him to be as dominant in both his starts. And certainly the no-hitter was just an extraordinary thing to watch. I'm delighted for the guy because, boy, it's a tough story, right? I mean, there's a guy that went through a whole lot of pain and agony and hard work, and now he looks like he's as good as we've seen him.
Well, people have to realize that long after the physical aspect of an injury leaves you, the psychological aspect of that injury lingers on. And so you start to throw the baseball, and having been through a rotator cuff issue myself, you throw the baseball, and then you kind of feel for what the pain's going to be. And then you keep throwing the baseball, and you keep feeling for the pain. I think it's difficult to come back from one major injury. I think it's even more difficult to come back from two. And Carlos was able to do that. The one thing I did know was that if he was healthy, and early in spring training he showed that he was, I didn't think there would be a competition for the fifth starting spot because he has so much more than Lopez has. He just has a better feel for pitching than Ronaldo has, and that doesn't demean Ronaldo. Rondalo's got a great arm. It's just that he doesn't understand finesse quite yet. I'm not sure if he really will. So Carlos won the battle, and then he's come out twice, and boy, has he been good twice. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who was slated at number five, which means he's going to get some starts, but if there's a rainout or an off day, he's going to probably miss some starts. And now doesn't appear that you want him to miss any starts. He's just really been good. And I think you noticed this last time through the rotation, we're seeing what we thought we would see in spring training, a starting rotation that protects the bullpen. They've been going deeper into games, and I think they'll just keep getting better and better. And I think maybe at most, Tony La Russa is going to have to cover nine outs out of that bullpen, and that's the goal. Nine outs or less out of the bullpen on a daily basis, and you can save the pen, and you can mix and match with who you want.
Steve, one shoelace away from perfection was poetic, and it was just a great job you and Jason did the other night, you know, calling a historic game and meeting the moment. And I think that, you know, as we have heard from people after the no-hitter, Ethan Katz yesterday referenced earlier, he said that if healthy, Carlos Rodon, he could envision being one of the best pitchers in the American League, if not all of baseball. Is that getting caught in the moment? Is that realistic? And I think the big words in that projection is if healthy, but do you see the same possibility?
Well, you look at this stuff and you say, how many people have better stuff than that? I mean, he started out throwing 93, 94. There wasn't a lot of life the first time through the batting order. I mean, all nine guys made contact. Didn't make great contact, but they made contact. So, you know, you're watching it and you're saying, hey, look, he's throwing strikes. A lot of these guys are swinging early. They're making contact, but the guys are making the plays, so everything's going to be fine. And also, I think it really helped. I mean, they jumped on Plesac so early in that a lot of the drama was out. And what a pitcher has to do in that situation is just make sure he throws strikes. Carlos was able to do that. So then you start to go the second time through the order, and you start to notice that, hey, that slider has a little more bite. He's mixing in his changeup. And the fastball had some really good life. The thing that I noticed early was that he was able to pinpoint that fastball. Now fast forward to the later two innings, especially the ninth inning. He's out there at 98, 99 miles an hour, faster than he had thrown the entire ballgame. So when you look at the observation of Ethan, you look at that stuff and you say, if healthy, there's no reason why he can't be one of the dominant pitchers in the league. The stuff is that good. The problem with what happens when you get injured is you are guilty until proven innocent. You're always, you know, you're always at one pitch, one inning away from going on the IL and the other, and then your ball club has to mix and match with somebody. I mean, I was injured a lot early in my career, and I made between the start of the 1977 season and May of 1981. So you're talking about 77, 78, 79, 80. So four years and 2 months. And I got hurt. It was really a carryover from the year before, and I missed the start. 147 straight starts, I missed one. Headline in the newspaper was oft-injured Steve Stone on the disabled list again. I mean, oft-injured? They don't make 147 straight starts these days. The problem is, again, you're innocent until proven guilty. You're guilty until proven innocent in this game, and that's what Carlos has to fight. The only way you can fight it, boys, is to keep going out there.
You know, it's pretty extraordinary when you think about that no-hitter. A few of the things that were also going on in that game. Number one, the catcher was Zach Collins. I don't know that we expected him to be a Major League Baseball catcher or even be on the team before spring training. Yermin Mercedes hit the three-run homer. I'm not sure the same thing. We thought that he would be even on the team before spring training, really as a result of a Loy injury maybe. And then you talk about Andrew Vaughn playing left field in that game. He had five putouts, and I mean, I thought, I get it that left field's not the most dominant defensive position, but if someone had told you earlier in the year that he'd be having five putouts and a no-hitter, I'm not sure anybody would believe it. It's just extraordinary when you add those things together. Maybe more implausible those things than Carlos Rodon throwing a no-hitter, Steve.
Well, look, let's take a microcosm of the entire year. We'll boil it down to the 2 weeks the season is going on at this point, and take a look at some of the things that happen, and you can extrapolate that over a six-month period, and you need a lot of things to go right. You need some young guys to come through that you never really thought of. You need a couple of surprises from your minor leagues. You need a pitcher to come through that was an afterthought. You need somebody maybe to come into your bullpen that you didn't think about before. And so, look, there's been some bad things on this club. The defense has been bordering between mediocre and atrocious. That can't go on. However, with basically the same guys, this defense is one of the better defenses in the league last year, and it gives you every indication that it will get back to that point. So that's what we've seen in the early going. However, you mentioned some of the surprises. If Eloy doesn't get hurt, there's probably no way that Mercedes makes this team. But make it, he did. And now he doesn't appear to be overmatched. It's 2 weeks into the season. He struck out three times. That's almost like Nick Madrigal. I mean, you get a guy with big power who's only struck out three times, that's something special. So a 10-year minor leaguer has come out and surprised some people. Vaughn made an outstanding catch in left field yesterday. For a guy who played first, who's just learning the position, he hasn't done anything wrong in left field. I mean, he's really played pretty well, to be honest with you. So you look at that, that's kind of somewhat surprising. You look at some of the other things. I mean, how many people thought Kopech could adjust to the bullpen as well as he has? He has done a really good job. Hoyer showed last year he looked like a pretty good pitcher. This year he's showing that he can be a back end of the bullpen guy with the stuff he's thrown. So there's been some really positive things. On the negative side, Moncada hasn't done what you want him to do, hitting in the four spot every day. Grandal has looked adequate or worse behind the plate, and he's just not hitting the ball. Hopefully he will get better. Abreu is not hitting the baseball. Hopefully he will get better. But Abreu says the same thing every year. He gets off slowly. The weather's cold. And then all of a sudden he comes to it and, you know, turns into an MVP year. He gives you no reason to believe this year will not be the same. So we've seen some things in a small sample size that some things we thought could happen, some things we never dreamed could happen. But right now, this team at 6-7, I think they're doing fine. They just got Anderson back. He could have easily had three hits yesterday. He got two. Tim's a catalyst at the top. He's a table setter. Adam Eaton has has really, if you take the glove and the defense out of the equation, offensively, he's done a terrific job. Drives in a lot of runs. He's hitting the ball out of the park. So there's some good stories. And in the not-too-distant future, Engel comes back. That makes the defense a whole lot better in the outfield. Tim's presence makes the defense a whole lot better in the infield. Madrigal is starting to play like we thought he could play. He's really a really good defender. We didn't see it early, but we will see it. So the defense is going to solidify. And then it's just a question of this team starting to put together all of the aspects that made them one of the real surprise picks in spring training.
I think you're right about Abreu, that he's earned the benefit of the doubt, and even Grandal to maybe a lesser degree. You figure he will hit because he has. I do wonder, Steve, do you see anything that is concerning about the approach with Yoan Moncada? And I guess maybe also to that, you know, Andrew Vaughn is here in the majors because of his bat. It's not because of his glove, even though he has been above average out there. But in terms of Moncada and Vaughn, anything that you have noticed that has limited them offensively or explained why they have struggled to the extent that they have?
Well, different reasons. Number one, Vaughn is very young in the game. And don't forget, after a very quick start last year, the league adjusted to Luis Robert, and he went into a protracted slump. That cost him the Rookie of the Year, despite the fact he won the Gold Glove. But the league figures out all the soft spots and exactly what they want to do with you, and then the hitter has to adjust to it. If you're a young hitter, that adjustment is pretty tough. Understand something with Vaughn. He's never struggled anywhere he's ever been. He literally has swung the bat and dominated leagues wherever he's been. So if you've never had these kind of struggles, it's really difficult to figure out exactly what you're going to do. And it usually all evens out in the major leagues. You can dominate every league from college, you know, from little league to pony league and college and above, and even in the minor leagues. And you can hit everybody around. You get to the major leagues, and all of a sudden everything evens out. And if you don't have the experience of fighting your way through a big slump, of adjusting to what the pitcher is going to do, of knowing what the pitcher wants to do with you and then reacting to that, then it comes a little more slowly than you would like. Some guys have no problem with it. Other guys do. Vaughn right now is in the feeling out process. I have no doubt, because he's hit everywhere he's ever gone, that he will hit. With Moncada, a couple of things. When he falls into problem at bats is when he decides that he's going to look at everything. He's going to just look at what the pitcher's got. In the meantime, he's two strikes, and then they wipe him out with something and makes weak contact. Abreu once told him, don't leave the at-bat in the hands of the umpire. That was the year that he got called out more than anybody in baseball. Now he's a little more aggressive on occasion early in the count. But I think I honestly don't know if being the four-hitter is weighing on his mind. He is not a four-hitter in the major leagues. I don't know what he is quite yet, but a couple of years ago, he's one of the best hitters in the league. His batting average was eighth in the league. He was a force offensively. We don't know just exactly what last year took away from him as far as COVID is concerned. And the problem, COVID is such a new thing that we don't know about the residual effects of it. We don't know how long it affects you, how it affects you, what it's going to do to you in the future. So, you know, it becomes really a difficult thing to analyze. But right now, I think he needs to be more effective early in the count, because guys are going to get ahead. And I talked about this stat. Corey Seager, one of the best shortstops around, when he sees a middle fastball, he has swung the bat 98.1% of the time. He never takes a middle fastball. I saw Moncada in one at bat take two right down the middle. I don't understand what you're looking for. I mean, nobody really squares up a breaking ball all that well. And to take two fastballs down the middle shows me that maybe he went up in that at bat, not particularly prepared for what the pitcher was going to do. Because middle, you can't be taking those. It's one thing, you know, it's one thing if you want to take a look at a pitcher. It's another thing when you're three at bats deep into the game and you're still looking. So, I mean, there's no easy answers to this. If there was, nobody would ever go into a slump. So right now, hopefully he picks it up, especially if he's going to hit four. I don't know how much longer Tony is going to hit him in the four spot, but right now he's the fourth hitter.
Steve, thanks a ton. Really appreciate it. Great insights as always. It's a joy to see something historic happen if you're on the call. Really, really great stuff.
Great stuff,
Thank
Steve.
Thank you. Mully, take care. David, have a good show, and I'll talk to you guys maybe next week. Let's see if we can talk a little more history.
That'd be fun.
Boy, that's beautiful. Let's get to it. That is Steve Stone. Always a joy to talk to Stoney. That's just, I mean, I can't tell you how much I enjoy his insights. We'll bring in Dan and Layla next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.